Good evening. I'm Lance Tawney, Senior Manager for Sportsman Leadership for the National Wildlife Federation. And welcome to tonight's Teletown Hall on the anniversary of the oil spill. Tonight you will learn about what two long-standing conservation organizations did during the days and months after the oil spill, and how fines and penalties already being assessed to BP and others can be used to restore the Gulf Coast. This is a storied region, rightly called the Sportsman's Paradise. The oil spill had its worst impacts on an already fragile habitat that is home to millions of migratory birds and one of the richest fisheries in the world. Unfortunately, this important habitat was already losing a football-sized piece of marsh every 38 minutes before the spill, for a total loss since the 1930s of 2,300 square miles. Fines and penalties that BP and other companies will pay must be used to restore the Gulf Coast ecosystem. Tonight, you will hear from two prominent sportsmen and conservation leaders with firsthand expertise of the special region and action you can take to make the Gulf Coast ecosystem whole again. I want to thank the thousands of sportsmen and women and members of the press who have called in for this event. Hunters and anglers have always played an essential role in the conservation of fish, wildlife, and the habitats that support them. Once again, sportsmen and women are stepping up together and ensuring that BP fines and penalties will be used to restore the Gulf Coast. It's important, and it can be done. Joining me tonight is Ducks Unlimited CEO and former U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director, Dale Hall, as well as National Wildlife Federation's CEO, Larry Schweiger. Each of these speakers will make a short comment, and then we'll be taking some questions from you, the listeners. And here's how that will work. At any time, if you have a question for our speakers, you can press star 3, and an operator will be there shortly to take your question. By pressing star 3, you will not be disconnected from the call. At the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to be patched through to your senators to let them know your desire for them to come together and ensure BP fines and penalties will be used for Gulf Coast restoration. For more information and to take action, visit vanishingparadise.org. The total length of the call will be about a half an hour. Our first speaker is Dale Hall, CEO of Ducks Unlimited. Dale?
Thank you, Land. I'd like to begin tonight by remembering that 1 year ago today, when the explosion took place, that 11 people lost their lives, and our hearts still go out to the families of those people who lost their lives in the explosion. The Gulf Coast is one of DU's highest priority habitats for wetland and waterfowl conservation. Coastal Louisiana alone is one of the most significant wintering areas for waterfowl in North America, wintering around 11 million ducks and geese each year. DU has been working to help restore the Gulf Coast wetlands for decades and has conserved nearly 110,000 acres in coastal Louisiana and over 171,000 acres in coastal Texas. While the oil spill had short-term and probably long-term consequences for habitat, waterfowl, and other wildlife on the Gulf Coast, our focus remains on the long-term loss of wetlands that has been underway for decades and threatens this vital ecosystem. Over the years, more than 1 million acres have been lost to subsidence, sea level rise, and saltwater intrusion. Over the past decades, that has averaged between 24 and 48 square miles every year. And as we speak, the average is about a football field sized wetland every 38 minutes. In response to the spill, Ducks Unlimited partnered with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and the Natural Resources Conservation Service in their Migratory Bird Habitat Initiative. Our efforts were focused on fall, winter, and spring flooding of interior coastal rice, pasture, and other wetlands to provide alternative habitat in the event that oil impacted coastal fresh and intermediate salinity marshes that are traditionally used by many species of waterfowl migrating through or wintering in coastal Louisiana and East Texas. In total, nearly 80,000 acres were flooded and heavily used by all water birds, and it occurred throughout the wintering period beginning in August with the arrival of the blue-winged teal and other migratory birds. I went down myself to examine those areas in August, and because the oil did not make it up into the marsh, did not mean that those weren't significantly important wetlands. There was a drought, and the 80,000 acres that were flooded by DU and our partners literally brought in hundreds of thousands of birds. DU and the National Wildlife Federation and many other conservation partners support the use of the Clean Water Act penalty fines for restoration of the coastal wetlands along the Gulf Coast. We believe that the Clean Water Act fully intended that the fines be levied in response to damages done to the natural resources, and therefore we believe that the fines accumulated should go back to nature and help those natural resources. DU, the National Wildlife Federation, and our partners have strongly urged Congress to designate no less than 80% of any fines collected to the conservation and restoration of the Gulf Coast wetlands and marine resources. Bills have been introduced into Congress by Senators Landrieu and Vitter, another by Senator Nelson of Florida, and one by Congressman Scalise. We urge all members of Congress to heed our request that regardless of which bill is passed, the requirement that no less than 80% of the fines collected be directed to the Gulf Coast restoration efforts. Those efforts have been identified many times in planning documents supported by the Corps of Engineers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Gulf Coast states, and numerous non-governmental organizations. Please contact your members of Congress and let them know that fines collected as a result of negative impacts to fish and wildlife resources should be directed to offset and improve conditions for those resources. Thank you, and now I'll turn it back over to you, Lance.
Thanks, Dale. And this is just another reminder that at any time, if you have a question for our speakers, you can press *3 and an operator will be with you to take your question. At the end of this call, you will have the option to be patched through to congressional offices to let them know your desire for them to come together and ensure BP fines and penalties will be used for Gulf Coast restoration. For more information and to take action, visit vanishingparadise.org. Our second speaker is Larry Schweiger, CEO of the National Wildlife Federation. Larry is a lifelong hunter and angler and an ardent conservationist for over 40 years. With great pleasure, I now turn it over to Larry Schweiger. Larry?
Thanks, Land. Dale talked about the what a valuable resource the Gulf Coast is for waterfowl and the hunting opportunities that go with it. As a hunter, I certainly concur with Dale's observations. The Gulf Coast is also vital for fishing and for seafood production. 40% of our nation's seafood comes from the Gulf Coast. That's an extraordinary amount of food that's provided for all of us. It has the largest catch of redfish in the world, found in the intricate marshes. And I can say that I was out there today, and the charter boat captains were saying that they've had a great fishing season. World-class opportunities for speckled trout, and they're just coming in now, incidentally. Fishing isn't just a way of making a living or to recreate, but it's a way of life down here, and it's fun to be with people who love the place the way they do. Unfortunately, the BP disaster could not have happened at a worse time last year for many commercially and recreationally important fish species that were spawning or just had completed their spawning. Species like speckled trout and redfish had their eggs exposed to the oil and the toxic effects of oil putting on the survival of even the more fragile species at further risk. We must dedicate the BP oil spill penalties and fines to Gulf Coast restoration. The National Wildlife Federation has been on the scene since the beginning of this disaster and continues to work closely with our regional offices in Baton Rouge, Austin, Atlanta, as well as our state affiliates to monitor and respond to the ongoing Gulf oil disaster. We are continuing to deploy our regional staff to engage local groups and volunteers and to respond from our D.C. area offices as needed to work with scientists and to monitor the Gulf ecosystems. Restoring the Gulf was one of the National Wildlife Federation's top priorities before the disaster, and it continues to be as that disaster fades from the headlines on television. The Federation has partnered with local organizations across the Gulf to work on local projects to help wildlife and to restore habitats. And to see more of that, you can go online at nwf.org/oilspill and see some of the work that we're doing. The fines and penalties are already being assessed to BP, and others should be used to restore the Gulf Coast to make it whole. You can visit vanishingparadise.org for for more information and to learn more about how to take action to help us on that. Whether it was restoration of game populations depleted by market killing during the turn of the 20th century or putting the lid back on the prairie in the 30s to the passage of the Clean Water Act, hunters and anglers have been at the heart of almost every major conservation victory in this country. This issue demands that we rise up once again to the occasion and to ensure that we have a Gulf Coast. We need to protect the resource here and make sure that BP penalties are used properly. It's going to take individual efforts like Captain Ryan Lambert, who is a hunting and fishing guide for Burris, Louisiana, who testified in Congress last fall urging our elected officials to take action, or Chris Nook, who's the CEO of HuntDocs.com, who joined dozens of other hunters and anglers to come across the country, coming from across the country. They flew to our nation's capital and urged Congress to take action. Still today, Congress has not taken steps to direct the penalties and fines, as Dale pointed out, 80% of which we think should go to restoring the Gulf Coast. And again, to learn more about that, visit vanishingparadise.org to take action. And now I'm going to turn it back over to Land.
Thanks, Larry. And now we're going to move into our question portion of the call. And then just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, press *3. So our first question is going to come from Richard Warner from Springfield, Missouri. Richard, I think your question is going to, this is going to be directed towards you, Dale. Richard?
Again, thanks for your time. It sounded like this could be an awful lot of money. Would you mind elaborating on what could happen to this money if it was not used for the coast?
Thanks, Richard. What our concern is when we look at the economy today, we look at the deficit, we look at the debt, we are very concerned that the money would just simply be put into Treasury, and then we don't know what would happen to it. We very strongly believe in trying to control the debt and trying to control the deficit, but at the same time, this is money that by law was intended to be used for natural resources. The fines are levied based upon the impact of natural resources, and we believe it should go there. There are numerous plans along the Gulf Coast accumulating up to an amount of over $50 billion to do full restoration and try and bring back some of those wetlands that have been lost. And so we believe that's where the money should go rather than have it become the political ping pong ball that it could be.
Okay, thanks. What do you think in regards to how we might use it to restore some of the coastal resources?
Well, there are a lot of studies that have been made, a lot of projects that have been discussed about particularly rerouting the Mississippi River and getting more of the Mississippi River water and sediment over into the Louisiana wetlands that have suffered the most loss. Historically, the river was a meandering river before the levees were built. And all of those wetlands were built with the deposition of sediment that came down the Mississippi River. So geologically speaking, those wetlands are relatively young. They need the nourishment, they need the fresh water, and they need the sediment in order to help rebuild those marshes. We have seen some growth on the Atchafalaya River. Its delta is actually showing us some growth, but we need to learn from that, bring it over, and use the Mississippi River to help build those marshes back. And by doing that, by the way, we also will be taking sediments that are laced with fertilizer coming off of ag fields that now just shoot straight off the edge of the continental shelf and have contributed to the hypoxia zone or the dead zone. So by working to use this kind of money to build real projects that build real wetlands, we're not only building wetlands, we're helping to reduce the input of nutrients that is actually causing that hypoxia zone.
Great. Dale, thank you. Right. I wish us all luck.
Thank you, Richard, for that call. Our next call will be from Steve in Austin, and this call or this question will be for you, Larry.
And what you are doing to restore the habitat along the Mississippi Delta, and what you're doing along the coastline. How does the work that you all are doing in that area going to impact the Gulf? I mean, we've actually heard that there's oil on the sea floor. How is all this going to play into the restoration you all are doing along the coast?
Well, Steve, first of all, thanks for that question. The key thing here is that the coastal restoration will help the entire Gulf Coast. The whole food chain of the Gulf of Mexico begins where the rivers meet the Gulf. You know, if you look at it, something like 90% of all the fishery in the Gulf of Mexico has its origin or some part of its life in the wetlands, particularly along the Louisiana coast. So the work that needs to be done, or the work that Dale was just describing a minute ago, has enormous potential for rejuvenating the system that's under enormous stress because of the various problems that have been set upon it for many, many years. So I think it's going to improve the fishery because we're going to decrease the amount of pollution going into the Gulf itself. We're going to be able to enhance the robust and abundance of birds and shorebirds and migrating waterfowl, all the things that the people who enjoy the outdoors would like to see.
I appreciate that. And real quick, a follow-up to the gentleman who asked the first question. I'm from Texas. Is there going to be any dollars to Texas? I mean, we weren't really as impacted by the oil spill, but is there any ideas about how the money might be divided if we can get it in?
All the bills out there, and I should say there are several bills pending right now, and it's important that all the lawmakers who are working on these bills get together quickly and get a bill passed. One of the things we didn't say was that if we fail to act now and there's a settlement, for reasons that I won't get into, it gets pretty complicated, but the money will be off limits to be used for the kinds of work that we're talking about. It's going to make it very difficult to reach that money. So I think it's important that we act now. It's important that people make those phone calls today. But that money will, in fact, be shared among the various states, and that formula hasn't been hammered out yet. But we expect that, you know, it will be done in a way that actually enhances the resources that are at risk.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Steve, for that question. Next, we'll have a question for Dale, and this is coming from Trey in Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
Hey, guys. I agree with you. I think it's real important that we use the money for restoration of our natural resources, but I can't help but wonder if it at least would be worth considering that we use some of the money to funnel to some of the other successful programs and use it for conservation throughout the country.
Thanks, Trey. I appreciate the question. It's a legitimate one because we have needs all over the country. Our position, though, is if we truly believe that the law intended that fines assessed for damage to resources in an area should go back to help the resources in that area and not be used for other purposes beyond conservation, then I think that we're obligated by integrity to believe that the money should go back to the impacted area. So we do believe that that the money should go there. I will say, though, that organizations like Ducks Unlimited, National Wildlife Federation, and others, we cost share, we help with projects on the Gulf Coast and across the country. And by having an influx of some funding down there to help with these projects, there's at least the possibility that it could free up our ability to help you and other states across the country with natural resource challenges that you have.
Thank you, Trey, for that call. Just a reminder to folks that are joining the call to ask a question of either Dale or Larry, just press *3. Our next question will be for Larry, and this is coming from Richard in North Carolina. Richard?
Hi, Larry. I'm a mountain trout fisherman from western North Carolina who's been bitten by the saltwater fly fishing bug. Haven't been to the Gulf yet, but want to. How do the restoration efforts improve the likelihood that I can come down there and catch a redfish and spend a little money?
Well, Richard, that's a great question. I had a conversation about that with my charter boat captain today. He was saying that that now is actually the time at this moment to get into some of that fly fishing for redfish. And he said it's an extraordinary experience. I have not done it yet, but Land promises he's going to work it out for me to do that. But, you know, the important thing that I want to come back to in all of this is that coastal Louisiana provides benefits for all of us, even if we don't know that. I mean, in terms of, you know, bird life that visits so many other states, in terms of the fishery that we enjoy. I mean, I spend a lot of my time on the Chesapeake Bay, and sadly, you know, most of the blue crabs that we eat in restaurants in Washington, D.C. are coming from this region because we've damaged the blue crabs up in the Bay region. So we're all enjoying the resources here one way or the other, and we all have a stake in this, whether we hunt or whether we fish or whether we just enjoy the seafood and the bounty of this region. But it's, you know, it's also, I think Dale hit it too, it's a matter of principle. We need to stand up when resources are being damaged. It's important for us to take a lead to call out, you know, the needed action and to work together. And I think that's one of the things that's happened over the years. Sportsmen from the East have helped sportsmen in the West and South and North and so forth. We've all stuck together. And when we do stick together, that's when we make the greatest difference. And I would urge you in North Carolina to be a strong voice for this restoration effort because it matters to everybody. Thank you.
Our hearts go out to those folks.
Thank you, Richard. Our next question actually came in on email from Ryan down in Louisiana, and this is for you, Dale, and I'll just go ahead and read it. I agree that it's important that this money be used for restoration of natural resources, but might it not be worth considering perhaps allowing it to be funneled through the other programs and use it to meet conservation needs throughout this country?
Thank you. I think that's pretty close to the question that I just had, that we understand the conservation needs across the country. Ducks Unlimited works in literally every state, and I think the National Wildlife Federation does too. But this is really a matter of, if we're going to make the argument that we believe the law says that fines received should go to the areas impacted and what was taken from nature should be returned to nature, then we also believe that we need to walk our talk and help push it there. But again, I'll reiterate that the more that we have going down on the Gulf Coast to help work this, the more latitude that it allows all of us to have to help in other parts of the country. But we really don't believe that it is the right thing to do to make the argument that the money that is collected in fines should go back to the resource that was impacted and then turn around and say, but let's spend this money somewhere else.
I might add a word on that, Dale. I think it's important to note that the states that will be eligible to get some money are Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida, and Louisiana. So, you know, those states are the ones who are affected by this bill directly, and that's what we're advocating, that money be used to tackle the really important restoration work that needs to be done in this entire region.
Thank you, Larry. We've been talking in generalities about the Gulf Coast, but it is important to, in the question of Texas a minute ago, help bring that out.
Thank you. We got another question for you, Dale, and this is from Chris from Memphis.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Hey, I appreciate you taking the time, guys, to answer these questions. I actually interned at DU, so I understand the importance of Ducks Unlimited and the National Wildlife Federation. I guess my question, y'all talked a little bit about showing some effort and kind of getting back to rerouting the Mississippi River. I know rerouting is a big term, but getting that water and that flow back into the original marshes. And I guess my question was, in efforts of doing that, I guess what is your main goal for that? And, you know, is that something that lends a little support if a situation like this were to happen again? And I guess, it's, you know, overall, like, what's the biggest goal in that aspect that y'all talked about?
Thanks, Chris. That's a good question. First of all, I think it's important that we've talked about the loss of coastal marshes down there. But it's the storms that come in, spills that occur, the different types of impacts that occur to the coast. The science indicates very strongly to us that those marshes are the buffer. Those marshes are what help keep the people safe. The USGS has done, the U.S. Geological Survey has done research that indicates, depending on the type of marsh that's there, that for every 2.7 miles that a hurricane travels across emergent vegetation, emergent marsh, that the storm surge is reduced by 1 foot. And those marshes off the coast of Louisiana used to go out nearly 100 miles. Had all of those marshes been there, it is unlikely that there would have been enough pressure in Pontchartrain to have ruptured the levees and caused the devastation that occurred in Katrina. The other part is that in working to try and rebuild it, our goal is the realistic question is how do you rebuild the Mississippi Delta? Now that you have the significant navigation channels, the Mr. Go, as they call it, the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet that's being plugged, but to help slow down the storm surge and that sort of thing. The real question, though, is where is the right place to divert some water, sediment, nutrients over to help build those marshes? And the question might actually reach the point of saying, where should the new Mississippi River Delta be, based upon its best, our best ability engineering-wise to be able to get it there. But the real goal is to start to stem the loss of the wetlands, which, again, is 24 to 48 square miles per year over the past few decades, and stop the loss and start the rebuilding. And so that's really what we're after, because in my way of looking at it, it's the wetlands that protect the levees and the levees that protect the people. So everyone from people to the natural resources benefit when we can rebuild these marshes.
Thank you. Just a reminder to folks, we'll be able to take a couple more questions, but press *3, and then you will be put into an operator and you'll be able to ask that question there. Our next question is for Larry, and this comes for Dale from Illinois, or Brad, excuse me, from Illinois.
Hello?
Hi, Brad.
Hey, I was kind of curious, of these multi-million dollar salaries the CEOs are getting, not mention the bonuses, how much are they donating back to the cause?
That's a great question, you know, and I, you know, when you look at the fact that oil companies don't haven't paid taxes, haven't, in fact, we've put $4 billion a year into oil companies, and those subsidies have been protected through the budget process that was recently adopted. It's pretty discouraging to see that kind of situation playing out. But I think it's really important to ensure that at least the penalties that they pay are actually going to do something really worthwhile, in this case, to restore the flows, the sediment flows that Dale was talking about a minute ago, back to the Gulf. And I certainly I share the frustration that you just shared there about the oil companies and how they're winning the game, frankly. And they don't want this to happen, and it's easy to see why. They know if we get a commitment to spend this money to do good things, that there'll be a lot of voices out there calling for fair penalties to actually fulfill the obligations under the Clean Water Act that they have to pay. And I think that we really are up against some lobby pressure here, and we ought to be aware of it, that there are folks who don't want this money to be used in the proper way, and I think that's a concern.
Thanks for that question, and this will be our last question. It'll be for you, Dale. It's Ernie from North Carolina.
Hi, Dale. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Good to hear you, Ernie.
Dale, I'm a volunteer with North Carolina Ducks Unlimited, and I'd just like to thank this forum and the opportunity for people to voice their opinion. DU and the National Wildlife Federation has done a lot of things, and I appreciate you and Larry's work as far as those conservation efforts. I'm really impressed with everybody's comments and how they have understood how all things are connected, and that our waterfowl and fishing, our economics and our recreation is all tied together. I'm also impressed with the questions regarding the Mississippi drainage and how the natural sediment creates habitat and benefit for wildlife and people. And I really appreciate Dale and Larry's responses regarding that. So a lot of my questions, as y'all have already answered, but I'll throw a couple of other ones in there. One, because I'm a waterfowl hunter. What's the impact or study on scalp, the bluebills, and has the oil spill affected them? And then two, how do we think that track records with the oil industry based on the results and the finds that came out of the Exxon Valdez, and how we feel like that the kind of results that may be different or similar to what happened many years ago there.
Thanks, Ernie. Those are really good questions. First on the scalp, because scalp are rafting birds and they're more out in open water, we still have question marks about what kind of impact occurred to them. It was a whole lot easier to track most of the other waterfowl that like to come to the Gulf Coast and stay in the fresh and brackish marshes, which were pretty much free of significant oil coming in them. But we still are interested in the scalp because as they raft out there in open water, they're feeding on the invertebrates, the fingernail clams, the different types of food sources that are out in the surf. We have worked with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They do surveys each year. Scalp was not one of the birds that they had counted along the Gulf Coast, and we requested, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agreed last winter that they included scalp in their midwinter surveys as they flew the coast. We're waiting for information back on numbers, and then we'll be watching up in the boreal forests of Canada where the scalp do most of their nesting. We'll be monitoring that through the nesting season, because while it may not have been a lethal dose of toxins that came from the oil, there could be what we call chronic levels, which can impact their physiological or physical ability to live and be able to produce eggs and have viable young and that sort of thing. So we're monitoring them together with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and with state agencies like Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. There are a lot of people trying to pay close attention to these species and try and understand what's happened, if anything negative, so that we can at least know that, because that's going to be really important in the natural resource damage assessment phase of an oil spill, which is ongoing. And that phase will probably be, that assessment will probably be going on for another at least couple of years. So hopefully it will give us a chance to see. But at least this winter, it looked like they were healthy. It looked like we had good flights going down, and this spring, good flights going back up. So we're cautiously optimistic, but we're going to be tracking them. And your second question, Lan, can you help me? I forgot what it was. The track record of the oil companies.
For a couple, yep.
Yeah, the comparison with... I certainly hope that this is not going to be comparable to the Exxon Valdez. That spill occurred a couple of decades ago, and yet there was a court decision just a year or so ago that was still pertaining to that. We're hopeful, Larry and I and our partners out there, we're hopeful that by bringing pressure on, we can help push for an early decision on how these things should operate instead of leaving it to long litigation arguments in court. And that is a large part of what we're trying to do right here. If we can reach our members of Congress, and if we can get them to understand the reasonableness of saying, look, you can keep 20%. You've already been reimbursed for all of your expenses, but you can keep 20%. We won't argue with you. We think 100% ought to go, but we think 80% ought to go back down to the resources. If we can get Congress to agree to that, then we can head off a whole lot of the court cases and the long arguments and appeals that took place in the Exxon Valdez. And that's our real objective here.
Thank you, Dale.
Appreciate it.
So our time is about to come to a close, and clearly with thousands of listeners, we weren't able to answer everybody's questions, but thank you for those questions. If you would like to have some of your questions answered or actually ask us more, go to vanishingparadise.org, and we'll take care of that. And also, if you want to take action to ensure that BP fines and penalties will be focused on Gulf Coast restoration, you can do it at vanishingparadise.org as well. Right now, we kind of have a special opportunity, and that is to hook you in with your elected officials. It's very easy. Press *0, and you'll be connected to the Senate switchboard. Just ask the switchboard operator to connect you to a senator from your state, and you'll be connected to their voicemail. Ask your senator to dedicate penalties and fines assessed to BP to Gulf Coast restoration. Include your name and where you live. Calling your senator right now really will make a difference. Congress is not going to do this unless they hear from a chorus of people, just like Dale talked about. Leaving a message is easy, and it will just take a minute or two. Again, press *0 to be connected to the Senate switchboard, and ask operators to speak with the senator from your state. And, you know, it's laid out there, but your comments tonight count just as much as if you called during the day. Basically, add those up. So it's very important that you could do it now, and just press *0, and tell them where you're from, and ask to be connected to a senator from your state. You can also take action again at vanishingparadise.org. I want to make sure that I give a big thank you for Dale and Larry getting on the phone tonight, and really even a bigger thank you for all those folks from across the country, the thousands of people that have gotten on the phone tonight. You're really making a difference for future generations so that they can enjoy the same hunting and fishing traditions that we do today. And this is important for me, who just have a 2.5-year-old daughter and just had a son. So what we're doing today helps out their future. You all truly represent a legacy of 150 years of leadership for fish and wildlife conservation in America. Thank you, and good night.